Can you hear me? All right, so let's go ahead and get started. First off, thank you all for coming along and joining me for this session. I'm here to talk about the SharePoint social architecture. A bit of background. So I'm a program manager in the SharePoint group, and in this last release, I was part of the team that owned most of the core social and SkyTrapro scenarios. So at a high level, what do I plan to cover over the next hour or so? I'll start off by trying to give you a walkthrough on two key aspects of the underpinning layer over which both the SharePoint Social and SkyTrapro features are based on. I'll try and focus on highlighting some of the key changes that we made in this release, again, at that same layer. And I'll also try and share with you a few pointers along the way, some of the stuff that you can look out for from an IT admin or deployment perspective. All right, so from an architecture perspective, we made a whole bunch of changes pretty much across the board. So just to call out some of the specifics on what I plan to cover in the session, I'll start off with talking about some of the interdependencies between the social set of features and my set in general. And for this, for the most part, I'll stay at a conceptual level. After that, we'll look at two key areas concerning my sites, my site discovery and my site provisioning. And when I talk about my site provisioning, I'm really referring to personal site provisioning, which is at a user level. So if a user has the relevant permissions, then the user can get a personal site. I'd also like to call out that in this last release, we spent a non-trivial amount of effort in trying to improve on the provisioning experience, the personal site provisioning experience, because the provisioning part was kind of the starting point for a whole bunch of social and SkyTrapro features. So we wanted to make sure that we improve on that first-run experience, and provisioning was kind of part of the first-run experience. So at the end of this talk, you should get an idea on the inner workings of my site discovery, personal site provisioning, and I'm hoping that that level of detail will help you in your deployment efforts. All right. So I'd like to start off by kind of walking you through the way my site has transitioned from 2010 to 2013. In 2010, MySite was the primary functional entity with which users interacted with, right? So you had MySite as one of the core scenarios, and we had a bunch of features around MySite, like activity feed, document library, and profile. And for the most part, even things like customizing a MySite, adding custom features, or even adding subsites to your MySites were all part of the primary use case of a MySite. But if you look at 2013, the UI has changed a lot. And you've noticed, or you must have noticed, that we've kind of pushed my site to the back end or to the background. And we are projecting the core scenarios like Newsfeed and SkyTrapro, and we've got those to the forefront. And we want users to kind of interact with these two core scenarios rather than thinking about my sites. But what I'd like to highlight over here is the new features that we've built in 2013 are based on the my site layer. And again, for this session, I'll be really focusing on the MySite layer and the changes that we made in this layer to support these new features. So I'd like to kick things off by kind of stating one of the key changes that we made in this release, which is if you need to enable social in your enterprise, you really need to plan for providing a personal site for every user. So it's a personal site collection. So there's a lot of implications around that, because you need to plan your content databases. When you plan your deployment or design your deployment, you need to make sure that you have the required number of content databases, because we have limits around the number of site collections you can have in a particular content database. So there are certain implications with regard to number of content databases and the storage, which you'll need to plan for when it comes to your deployment. So this is one of the key changes when it comes to social that we've made in 2013. All right, so I didn't mention that the news features are based on my site. So let's kind of look at what are the key building blocks of my site. Now, we have some of the basic prerequisites, like you need to have a web app, preferably a web app dedicated for your my site deployment. You need to associate a bunch of content databases to the web app. And of course, you need to have some of the services, like UP and search, to be in place for my site to work. But apart from these basic services and basic prerequisites that should be in place, My site in general, when you look at the key building blocks of my site, it consists of the my site's host site collection and the personal site collections, again, at a user level. So these are the two key building blocks when it comes to my sites. Now, if you look back in 2010, these two site collections were, for the most part, mutually exclusive. There wasn't much of an integration or interaction between these two site collections. If you remember, we just pretty much had one UI level integration where on the my site host, there was this my content link. When you click on the my content link, the user would be taken to the user's personal site. That was pretty much the level of integration that we had in 2010 when it comes to these two site collections. So for the most part, these two site collections were mutually exclusive. Now, that's really changed in 2013 because, as I mentioned earlier, the social set of features are really based on these two site collections, and it's built across these two site collections. So the level of integration and interaction between these two site collections have increased. So if you take an action, let's say, for example, on the my site host, that will result in reading some data from the personal site of the user or the other way around. So if I take an example, let's say Joe as a user goes to the my site host page, which is actually the newsfeed page right now, and we'll get into a little bit of detail on what is on the host page, host site collection and on the personal site in a moment. But what I really want to kind of highlight over here is if you take actions on the host page or a host site collection or any page on the host site collection, that will involve reading data or pushing data into the user's personal site. And again, the key thing what I want to highlight over here is when it comes to social, you really need to have the user's personal site to be in place for that end-to-end scenario or end-to-end features to work. All right, so let's drill down into what really is in the my site host site collection and the user's personal site collections. On the my site host site collection, we have two features, the newsfeed feature, which is hosted on the newsfeed page, and the about me page, which is the profile. So those are hosted on the my site host site collection. But more importantly, when it comes to site contents, we have two key pieces of data stored on the my site host site collection, which are the profile pictures. So if a user adds a profile or a picture to his profile or her profile, that will get added into the my site host site collection. And the second is if Joe, let's say, for example, decides to post on his newsfeed and adds an image to the post, that image is stored in the host site collection. Now, why is it important to figure out or to understand what is really stored in this host site collection? And the reason for that is quota assignment. We've set the default quota for the my site host site collections to 50 MB. Now, for most deployments and rollouts, if the number of users involved in that rollout is, let's say, up to 1,000 users, this should suffice. But if you're involved in some kind of a deployment or a larger deployment with more number of users, then after you deploy SharePoint and after you set up your My Site Host site collection, this is the first thing that you should maybe revisit. Try and increase the default quota to something higher than 50 MB. In case the my site host site collection runs out of space, users, some of the features will start to break. And some of them are users will not be able to add a profile picture. So if a new user comes on board and wants to refresh or update his or her profile, will not be able to do that. Users will not be able to post pictures in their feed. And most importantly, new users who are coming on board will not be able to get a personal site. Because we've changed the backend implementation of how personal sites are provisioned, and we've taken a dependency on the host site collection. And because of that, in case the host site collection runs out of space, the provisioning pipeline, the personal site provisioning pipeline will break. So it's really important that in case you are involved in some kind of a deployment which is over and above 800 or 1,000 users, then you should revisit this, this quota, the quota limit. All right, so let's look at personal site collection. On the personal site side, we have, of course, the SkyDrive Pro feature, and we also have two social-related feature pages, which are the doc following page and the site following page, which basically list out the sites you're following and the docs you're following. But again, more importantly, when it comes to site contents, we have the social store as part of the personal site, which is basically two lists, which are called the microfeed list and the social list. And on the SkyDrive Pro side, we have the document library, which powers the the Sky Drive Pro feature. Now, what really gets written into these social lists and the social store and at what time will be covered by Matt and Ben in the next session. But I just wanted to kind of, at a high level, give you a pointer on what is really stored on the personal site collection. So again, looking at quota for personal site, the default is set to 100 MB. Now again, this is really low, looking at some of the scenarios that we've enabled in 2013. But let's say, for example, you are looking at a very specific deployment for social, then most likely this is good enough. And we really wanted to give control to IT admins to kind of decide on what quota will really help or what really will work for them. And that's the reason why we left it at a low limit, which is the same as 2010, so we didn't really change that. And in case the personal site collection runs out of space, then the side effects are the users will not be able to post because at the time of post, we write some data into the user's personal site. And users, of course, will not be able to add add documents to the SkyDrive Pro or document library. And again, the other point which I'd like to add here is, in case you are involved in a deployment where SkyDrive Pro client is going to be deployed across the enterprise, then definitely 100 MB is not going to be good enough because users are going to use up that space in short time. I'd also like to call out that in case if any of you are planning to move to the cloud and start to look at transitioning to the cloud, in Office 365, we provide 7 GB of space for every user's personal site. So that's something that you would want to keep in mind in case you have plans to move to the cloud. All right, so I just want to kind of recap. We looked at my site, host site collection. We looked at personal site collection. We looked at what is the site contents on both these site collections. Now let's take a look at where these entities actually get stored at the database level. Now user profile, of course, continues to be in the profile database. But the big change here is the social related data is going into the content database, which is kind of a shift from 2010 because in 2010, social data was stored across profile database and social DB, but we've taken a shift and moved to the content database in 2013. And the primary reason for that was because, again, let me give you a little bit of background. I'm sure most of you have configured UPA, and UPA, you can only have one instance of the UPA per farm. Now, as you create the UPA, that's when you create your profile database and social database, right? So since you can just have one instance of the UPA, you can only have one instance of profile database and social database. Now, the issue with having one instance of a database is when you have to apply some kind of a scale-up or a scale strategy, the only strategy that you can apply is to scale up. You really cannot scale out. So to support large-scale social deployments, we felt that going with the social database and having a scale-up strategy may not really work for all the deployments. And that's the main reason why we thought moving to content database would be a better idea. And the other point I'd like to make here is when it comes to social database, the social database is kind of tuned for read-intensive operations. So if any feature is reading a lot from the database, then that will work when it comes to the social database. But since our new scenarios and new features are very read and write intensive, social database wouldn't work for us. And that's the other reason why we decided to move to the content database option. And of course, content database does support scale out strategy, so you could add more and more content database to your web app and hence have that kind of a scale out strategy. So that is the main reason why we moved from social DB option to starting to store data in the content database. So I'd like to do a quick recap on what we just talked about. We looked at the interdependencies between the social set of features and MySite in general. We looked at how MySite kind of transformed from being this primary use case or primary core scenario in 2010, and now it's more of a backend kind of a layer over which we have these new features. We looked at the site collection breakdown and some of the details around quota and how it might impact you when it comes to your deployment. And also we looked at why we moved from social DB to content DB when it comes to storing data. All right, so let's move on to the changes that we made at the MySite layer. Now, when we started to look at SharePoint 2013 and started to plan on the kind of scenarios that we wanted to add in this release, there was this one gap that was kind of common across a lot of scenarios. And that gap was for the user to get to the right SharePoint server. There was this barrier that the user had to cross to get to the SharePoint server. Because when user wants to use some SharePoint location, the user wouldn't know, you know, what to actually enter or where should I actually go. User wasn't sure about that. Let me give you a very simple example. Let's say a user just fires up Word, client application, starts off writing a document, and wants to save the document in SharePoint. At that time, the user is going to figure out, okay, what's the URL that I should enter? I mean, of course, the user has a couple of options. The user could choose a document library in any of the team sites that the user has access to, or the document library that's part of the person site. But in either case, user is not sure what URL to enter in the save dialog. And this is the problem that we wanted to solve. And we wanted to kind of solve this in a very seamless fashion, because the intent was to not expect the user to enter the URL. We just wanted to present the user with something so that the user can just choose from maybe a list or maybe from one option. If you want to draw parallels, it's very similar to how Outlook and Exchange kind of work with each other. When you start up Outlook for the very first time, you just enter your user ID, and then Outlook and Exchange kind of work with each other to figure out on which Exchange server your mailbox is on, gives that piece of information back to Outlook, and then Outlook connects to that Exchange server and brings down your email. In no time in this experience does Outlook ask you for your Exchange server name. So that's pretty much the paradigm that we wanted to kind of follow. So what we did was we basically, you know, since Exchange kind of solved this problem in a very fantastic fashion, we thought we'll just work with Exchange and leverage what they've already done rather than trying to rebuild the whole stack again. So what we did was we basically worked with the Exchange folks and created a property on the Exchange side which will basically hold an entry point into SharePoint. So that's basically what we did. So when it comes to setting it up or wiring this whole thing up, what you have to do is, as SharePoint admins, you basically have to first, of course, deploy SharePoint and create the MySite host. But once you do that, you have to basically request your Exchange admin to update a specific property on the Exchange side with the MySite host URL. So the specific property is called SP MySite host URL, and we have a script which should be uploaded very soon called the set MySite host URL in AD, which will help you to actually update that property. This script should be available in TechNet script library. So once Exchange admin actually runs the script and updates that specific property, on the SharePoint side, you can basically, you know, double check if that update has gone through fine or not by looking at the MySite settings page. So in the MySite settings page, we have this new section called MySite host URL in Active Directory. And if the update has gone through fine, and if it's successful on the Exchange side, then you will see the MySite host URL on the SharePoint side. So this way, you can basically validate, you know, if the Exchange folks have done the right thing with regard to updating the property. Now, how does this all work? Well, just to give you a high-level overview on what, you know, what really happens when it comes to discovery. On the Exchange side, I'm not going to get into too much detail on how things work on the Exchange side, but at a very high level, on the Exchange side, we have something called the auto discovery protocol, which, given a user ID, will figure out kind of information about the user, especially around the Exchange server piece, and it will return back an auto discovery response to the client. Now, we have this implemented on the phone and on the Office client. So when, let's say, for example, you load up Office 2013 Word client application. At the time of launch, we have a piece of logic in there which will try and discover the user's MySite. And what it does is basically tries to talk to the Exchange endpoint called the client access server. And the client access server is the server which basically hosts the auto discovery protocol. And the auto discovery protocol basically accepts the request, takes the user context into account, Of course, it figures out all the exchange piece of information, but it'll also read that property which I was talking about a little earlier, reads that property value, and gives it back to the client as part of the auto-discover response. So the client basically will get a handle or an entry point into SharePoint, which is basically the MySite host URL. All right? So on the client, once the client has that entry point, what it does is it'll basically get, or it can actually do get or set, but over CSOM or REST API, what we do is we basically ask, giving again the user context, it'll ask SharePoint, okay, give me the user's personal site. Now, once the client has the user's personal site, then, you know, of course, we have all the piece of information that's required to show users a bunch of options that the user can choose from. So let me kind of show you what it looks like on the client. So this is the phone experience or the phone UI. This is the Office Hub. So as soon as you set up Outlook on your phone, you'll start to see that the Office Hub is all set up. At no point you'll need to kind of start to figure out what the SharePoint URL is or try and enter the SharePoint URL to set up your Office Hub. So as soon as you set up your Outlook, you'll see that your Office Hub is all set up when it comes to SkyDrive Pro. So I've just highlighted what you'll see. This is a Microsoft account, so you'll see SkyDrive Pro at Microsoft, but in your case, you'll see SkyDrive Pro at, you know, someplace else. So this is the phone, and of course, once you have this setup, you can browse through all your documents, right, you know, on your phone without really entering any URL. And this is what you'll see on the backstage. Again, going back to the scenario that I started off with, you start off Word, you start off writing a document, you save, you're not going to be stuck anymore. Because through the discovery process, we will discover your SkyDrive Pro location and present that to you as an option, rather than expecting you to kind of enter a SharePoint URL. So that's a big change from 2010. I think we'll keep it for later, if you don't mind. Yeah. All right, so a quick recap on discovery. We feel that we've done a bunch of changes around discovery, which will enable adoption. We've kind of solved that barrier that I was talking about, which the user need not cross anymore when it comes to 2013. User will be presented with options rather than expecting the user to enter SharePoint URLs. We talked about the setup on how you can work with your Exchange admin to set things up and configure auto-discovery or MySite discovery for you. And finally, we just got a peek into what the user would see when it comes to experience. All right, so let's move on to provisioning, because we did a bunch of changes in the provisioning layer. And we could also consider provisioning as a logical transition from discovery in certain cases. Again, going back to that simple scenario that we talked about, user files up Word, we try and discover the user's personal site. In case discovery comes back with nothing, we've got logic on the client, which will send a request to the server to provision a personal site for the user, just so that we can show that SkyDrive Pro option in the backstage. So in certain scenarios like these, we have a logical transition from discovery to provisioning. But I'd like to start off with kind of stating the key change that we made in 2013, which is moving from a synchronous model to an asynchronous model. If you remember, in 2010, if a user goes to, let's say, the MySite host page and clicks on the My Content link for the very first time, what would happen is the user would be presented with some kind of a spinny wheel UI, which is kind of a blocking UI, indicating that there's something going on in the back end, which is basically the personal site is getting provisioned for the user. A couple of issues with this. On the UI front, Let's say, for example, the wait is too long and the user decides to close the browser and move on to other things. What would happen in that case? What would happen is that would mean that it'll cancel the ongoing operation in the backend. And in most cases, personal site would end up in some kind of an undefined state. And when that happens, the user will have to kind of call his or her SharePoint admin and request them to delete the personal site, right? And after that, the user will try again and see if it goes through the second time. So that's the issue on the UI front. On the perf side, personal site instantiation is still an expensive operation. So from the WFE to the SQL, there's a lot of back and forth calls going on for personal site to kind of complete successfully. Now, in 2010, we did not have a lot of issues because we just had this one entry point which will trigger provisioning, because of which we did not receive a lot of requests at any given point of time. So the server could kind of handle that load. So just to give an illustration of it, this is what used to be the case in 2010, where we had a bunch of existing users trying to use SharePoint. And a few users would come along at any given point of time, click on the My Content link to get a personal site. There's not much of an impact on the server here when it comes to, even though personal site is an expensive operation, there's not much of an impact on the WFE and the SQL Server. But then why did we move from a synchronous model to an asynchronous model? The main reason is we increased the number of entry points which trigger personal site provisioning. So just to give an idea, we used to have one entry point in 2010. We now have three entry points on the browser. So if the user clicks or navigates to the newsfeed page, the About Me page, which is the profile page, or the SkyDrive Pro page, we will trigger a personal site provisioning request on the server. So just in terms of entry points, it's increased three times, from one to three, when it comes to the browser. When it comes to the client, I kind of touched upon it a few minutes back. If you have Office 2013 client installed, it'll go through the discovery process, and if it comes back with nothing, that's going to also trigger a personal site provisioning request on the server. Now, if you plan to deploy Office 2013 client across your enterprise, then you really need to plan for 100% adoption of my site or 100% adoption of personal sites. And again, that has a bunch of implications with regard to content databases and number of site collections and storage and all that. But what we felt was, just because we've enabled all these entry points across the browser and the Office 2013 client, this is something which we wanted to plan for, where, of course, we had a bunch of existing users trying to use SharePoint. But there could be this large set of users coming in at very short period of time to try and provision a personal site. Let's say you deploy SharePoint over the weekend and roll out the 2013 clients over a particular week, and on Monday morning people start to come in and fire up Word, Excel, or PowerPoint. It's quite possible that you'll get a whole bunch of requests coming in. And we wanted to kind of solve or handle that scenario too. Because if we had stayed with the synchronous model, then the server would try and handle all the requests at any given point of time, and that could cause issues on the WFE side. There could be server meltdown issues. Or also, if in case the server is able to handle a certain number of requests, it's quite possible that existing users might get impacted when it comes to them trying to use those, some of the core scenarios, like trying to get to the newsfeed page or the profile page. So we did not want to land in this kind of a situation where we see reds when it comes to the server and page requests. So on the implementation side, as we moved from the synchronous model to the asynchronous model, now we have a queue. That's the implementation part. So on the UI front, so what has changed? Let's talk about what's changed after we moved this implementation from synchronous to asynchronous. On the UI side, the user will no more see the spinny wheel UI, the blocking UI that they used to see in 2010. The user will land up on a page, will see a welcome message, and we'll take a look at it in a few minutes. But the user is free to actually navigate to other pages and start to use other features that's available, like they could look at their profile, update their profile, and follow people and things like that. So the user is not really blocked. That's on the UI side. On the perf side, what we've done is, on the perf side, how this has helped is SharePoint now will be able to handle all the provision requests in a controlled manner, rather than trying to accept all the requests. As we receive requests, it's all going to get pushed into a queue, and SharePoint is going to just process requests as and when as it can. So if SharePoint can handle 3 or 5 or 10 requests at a given point of time, that's all they're going to process compared to all the requests that's coming in. So let's look at the queue design. We basically categorized or classified users into two categories. Browser users, depending on the entry points, and the office client users. So let's take a look at what really happens from here on. So let's say, for example, we have a bunch of users using either Office 2013 client or trying to use SharePoint through the browser. Let's say a user comes online, navigates to the newsfeed page. That request will go into the browser queue, which is also called the interactive queue. And the reason why it's termed as interactive queue is because the user is going to the browser or accessing a specific newsfeed page or a profile page with a specific intent there. The user wants to actually interact with that page immediately. And that's the reason why we have this specific queue called the interactive queue. And in case a different user comes online and starts up the Word or Excel or PowerPoint application, and if that user needs a personal site or requires a personal site, that request will go into something called a non-interactive queue. And we also believe that interactive requests should be handled at a higher priority because the user, again, as I mentioned earlier, is at the browser to actually start to interact with SharePoint pretty much immediately, rather than the save scenario where in case the user starts to write the document and saves, and if the user does not have one of the locations as SharePoint, the user could, of course, look at an alternate location. But when it comes to interactive users, they're really looking at interacting with SharePoint almost immediately. So that's the reason why we wanted to handle interactive requests at a higher priority than non-interactive requests. And the way we do that is by having a second queue for interactive queue. So we basically have two interactive queues and one non-interactive queue. And what this basically means is we will process twice the number of interactive requests compared to non-interactive requests. It's a pretty simple model. So the next user who comes online and, let's say, clicks on the newsfeed link or the profile link or the About Me page link will land up in the second interactive queue. So we looked at how requests get pushed into the queue. Let's see how it gets processed. Now, we all know the time of service infrastructure which SharePoint has, and we're pretty much reusing the time of service infrastructure to process these requests. The time of service wakes up every minute. That's the schedule. And we have something called the MySite provisioning job that's defined, which will process requests in these queues. And you also will notice there's a number 3 at the end, which basically means that the time of service will wake up every minute and spawn 3 instances of the MySite provisioning job. And each instance is for each queue. So we have 3 queues. The 3 instances will run at any given point of time, processing requests in each of the queues. Let's take a quick look at how do we process these requests. So an instance of the MySite provisioning job will basically read a batch of 5 requests in each of the queue. So I've just labeled these queues as IQ1 and IQ2 for interactive queues and NIQ for non-interactive queue. So the MySite provisioning job basically picks up the first 5 requests in the queue and will create a personal site for those requests. And if you have multiple content databases in your deployment, then it'll basically go in round robin fashion. So the first request will get provisioned in the first content database and the next one will get created in the next content database. So we kind of space it out in that fashion. In case, you know, there are issues with regard to personal site provisioning, I just want to kind of call out that it's basically two pieces, right? I mean, we have the request part and the processing part. So in case you end up looking at the logs, when it comes to requests, you've got to look for, as a reference, you've got to look for the W3WP process, because the WFE is the one which is pushing the request to the queue. So look for W3WP.exe as a reference when it comes to logs. And when it comes to processing, look for the OWSTimer.exe as the process reference. So it's kind of a two-step process when it comes to provisioning. Pushing request into the queue, again, and the provisioning part. And these two processes basically handle these two pieces of provisioning. Now, we just touched upon this right at the start of the session on what has changed when it comes to what is really required when it comes to social. You really need to plan for personal site. And that was not the case, again, on 2010. So in 2010, if you wanted to enable activity feed, you really did not need a personal site. But in 2013, you really need a personal site for social. And the reason why I have this here is to kind of give you an idea on what has changed on the permissions front. These were the three options that you had in 2010. You still have the three options, but I've highlighted that create personal site, we've qualified create personal site and kind of renamed those strings just so that you understand what the implications are. So create personal site is required for social. Again, I just want to reiterate that. And we've renamed the other two options. Use personal site, use personal features did not really reflect what it was all about. So we've replaced that with follow people and edit profile. And use social features in 2010 was just about tags and nodes. So we replaced that with tags and nodes. So again, just to put some context, this is in central admin under user profile. And under user profile, you'll see something called the manage user permissions. And once you click on that, you'll see these dialogues. All right, let's talk about performance. We did a bunch of work around improving performance when it comes to provisioning. In 2010, if you notice, or I'm not, if you look at the number of features that used to get activated when it comes to provisioning, we used to activate all kinds of features at the time of provisioning a personal site. It was in the range of 50 or 60 features that used to get activated. And most features weren't being used by all the users. So when we took a look at what we planned to do in 2013, and when we finalized on kind of identifying that, you know, social and SkyDrive Pro are going to be the core scenarios that we're going to go after, we thought that as part of the default experience, we'll try and just activate the features around these two scenarios rather than activating all the features available in SharePoint. So the one thing what I'd like to call out here is, in case you have a bunch of advanced users who want to use features like adding a custom list or adding external lists, in those cases, users will need to go to the Manage Features page and activate the relevant features there before they can use these kind of features in their My Site. But by default, we've tried to restrict the number of features that we activate at the time of provisioning. And we've tried to just activate those features required for the two core scenarios. We've still got a bunch of features which we couldn't remove, but we tried to reduce the number of features that we activate. And hence, we've brought down the number of the amount of time that it takes for provisioning a personal site. All right, so let's look at one of the user profile properties that we added. We added a property called the personal site instantiation state. Now, if you go back to 2010, there was no state management kind of a support when it comes to personal sites. The only way you could kind of infer that you have a personal site is by looking at something called the personal space URL property. So if the personal space URL property had a value, then you'll have to kind of guess that, okay, the personal site might be there for the user. But for you to really be sure that the personal site is really there, you'll have to load up the personal site collection object and check if the SP site object is valid or not. But that's kind of expensive. So when we started to think about the whole queue design and started to implement the queue design, we thought that it'd be a good idea to add a profile property which will give you some idea on what state the personal site is in. So the possible states in which the personal site can kind of go through are uninitialized, which is kind of the starting point. After that, if the user or if the request is in the queue, the state will be enqueued. And at the end, of course, it will be created. I'd also like to kind of point out that in 2010, in case the user ended up deleting the personal site, then you know, all bets are off because we really don't update that personal space URL property which I was talking about. And that's again changed because we set the state to deleted in 2013 so that you really know what's really going on with the personal site. So, of course, this is not an end-to-end hardcore support when it comes to state management, but it's kind of a start and a much better support when it comes to 2013, when you compare it with 2010. Now, let's take a quick look at what the user would see. And I did kind of touch upon this earlier, but this is what the user would see. As soon as the user navigates to any page which will, you know, kickstart provisioning in the backend, the user would land up on a welcome, on a page which will have this kind of a welcome message. The welcome message does have a bunch of useful links. The user can hop around and maybe update the profile and things like that. In case the wait is too long, we send an email. In case email is configured, we'll send an email to the user after provision is complete so that the user can kind of come back and start using some of the SharePoint features. All right, so let's look at the API that we added after we, you know, changed the whole provisioning mechanism in 2013. It's called the Create Personal Site Enqueue API. It takes a parameter, true or false, basically. If you pass true, you'll send the request to the interactive queue, and if you pass false, it'll send a request to the non-interactive queue. Now, as SharePoint admins or, you know, IT pro, why would you use this API? Let's kind of run through a scenario where this might be useful. Now, let's say you would deploy SharePoint, and you send out some kind of an invite email to 5,000 users, stating that, okay, the new SharePoint is here, start using these bunch of features. Let's say 4% of those users immediately clicks on that email or the links in that email. That would result in about 200 requests, 100 requests in each of the interactive queues. Now, the side effect of a queue is there's going to be some amount of wait time for a certain number of users, and that's what I want to try and highlight over here, that users who are in the back or the tail end of the queue might end up waiting for a certain amount of time before they can start using the social features. So one option is, of course, you can phase your, you know, email invites. Instead of sending out 5,000 emails, you could maybe send out in 100 in chunks of 1,000 or 2,000. But still the wait could be, it could be significant. There could be some amount of wait. So I've just given an example, like if you have a deployment with 3 WFEs, and let's say we go with the assumption that it takes about 30 seconds to process each request. Then if you have a queue with 100 requests, then the max wait time for the user who is in 100th in the queue will be about 20 minutes. Now, some of the other considerations or something else that you can maybe explore is to use the Create Personal Site Enqueue API. And what you could do is, in case you can maybe choose the highly, let's say, active users from your 5,000 users, and if you want to maybe come up with some kind of pre-provisioning strategy and pre-provision personal site for these bunch of users so that as soon as they, you know, click on the link, it's all set up for them to start using all the social and scattered pro features. So Create Personal Site Enqueue might be useful in that scenario where if you want to have some kind of pre-provisioning strategy in place that will help you, you know, get things going in a much faster rate. I'd also recommend, you know, pushing requests into the non-interactive queue rather than the interactive queue, because in case some users decide to come online before you are really ready, they'll be pushed into the interactive queue, and even though the non-interactive queue is really long, they'll get their personal sites almost immediately. And if their request comes up again in the non-interactive queue, it'll be just a no-op, so there's no impact there. So that's one place where you could use the Create Personal Site Enqueue API when you know, when you start to think about your deployment and your rollout, and when you want to kind of have some kind of pre-provisioning strategy. All right, so I just want to wrap up. With regard to social architecture, we looked at, okay, social pretty much equates to personal site. The user really needs a personal site to use any of the social features. We looked at discovery and how seamless the user experience is after some of the changes that we made, and how that will also help increase in adoption. And we looked at some of the details around personal site provisioning and what you should expect when you roll out your deployments and how the queue is going to impact, you know, both positive and negative way, and how you can maybe counter some of the negative aspects of the queue. I can take some questions, and I'd also like to call out the next session is breaking down newsfeed, so I'll look out for that. And in the meantime, I'll try and see if I can spin up a demo which will give you some kind of an idea on the my site provisioning lifecycle from start to end. Right. All right. So this is a example of a new user who've just landed on the My Site homepage, which is the newsfeed page. And I have another user. So I already did that. So let me try and take another user. So this is Terry Adams, and I'm going to navigate to his newsfeed page, and let's see what happens. All right, so we get a pop-up. And we get the welcome message which I was talking about. Right? So let's look at what really happens in the back end. So I talked about the three queues, and when I talked about the three queues, that's basically at the logical level. But when it comes to the physical level, we're basically pushing requests into a table, right? So as IT pro, if you want to really look at what's really happening in the back end, when is the request coming in, and how many requests do you have pending in the back end, what you basically need to do is look at the content database. And under the content database, we have a table called Scheduled Work Items table. I'm not sure if it's visible. But we have something called the Scheduled Work Items table, which is basically the table which the workflow infrastructure uses to push requests into the queue. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to refresh. And now I have, you can see that we have two requests in the queue. So the one request which I had already shown earlier. Of Wendy. And the second request is of Terry. So we have two requests pending in the queue. We basically identify each of the queues by a GUID. So something starting with E94 is the first queue, and the second one is starting with 28. So if you look at some of the pieces of information over here, the type basically identifies the queue, which is the logical queue. Let's take a look at the job page, because finally the MySite instantiation job should be running in the back end for processing these requests. Now, I had disabled these jobs because I just wanted to have a little bit more control during the demo, but by default, these jobs are scheduled for every minute. So let's go in and hit run now. So that's the first queue. And then we have the second job, which is called the MySite Second Instantiation Interactive Request Queue. And I'm going to hit run now. All right. So let's go back. I also wanted to kind of point out that as you, the first default state, as soon as the request is pushed into the queue, is 8. That means the request is enqueued. But as soon as the request is being picked up for processing, you'll notice that the internal state turns to 9. So that means I just started to run the job, so the job has already picked up the two requests in the queue, and it's changed the intern state to 9, which means it's under process. Let's go back to the UI. And as I had mentioned earlier, the user can look around, click on the About Me page if required, can edit their profile. Could look at the people's page and follow people. So user could still hop around and start using SharePoint while their personal site provisioning is happening in the background. Let's go back to the table and see. All right, it's still under process. So until then, you're going to continue to see the welcome message. So let's say if I click on the newsfeed page for Terry, it'll still be on the newsfeed page. And also, I'd like to highlight that there are some links on the welcome message which will allow the user to change their photo, for example, or adjust their privacy settings. So these are some of the options that we provide so that the user can kind of get started. And let's see if I can take questions while we wait. So So when it comes to social data in 2010, that's going to continue to be in the social database. We're not going to move that. So if you use tags and nodes, let's say, for example, in 2013, that's going to continue to be in the social database. We're not going to change that. So the upgrade process is going to be the same when it comes to social data. So what I was referring to during the session was more about the new social set of features. The data basically powering the new social set of features are going to go into the content database. So I don't think there'll be an upgrade implication there because the social data, which is the existing social data from 2010, is going to just remain there, and we're not going to move that out to content database. So I'm not sure if that was clear.
Yeah, in terms of 2013,
2013, do you need to bring any other database forward? No, we don't have to. Just the content. Yes. I'm not sure about going forward what the plan is for tags and nodes, if it's going to be in the social database or if you're going to plan to move that out. But right now, if your scenario includes tags and nodes and the new set of social features, then you'll need to bring in both social database and the content database. Yep. We've got a bunch of VMs here. So from our tests and what we've done, The personal site provisioning, the range that we've seen is 18 to 30 seconds. That's what we've seen. In 2010, it used to be, I think, 45 a minute, sometimes 2 minutes. But we've tried to bring it down to that range. Of course, there are exceptions, like if it's all running on a VM or a bunch of deployments are running on a VM, then it's going to take some time. But so there are a couple of intricate details when it comes to instantiation or provisioning. If the indicator is the newsfeed, like for example, like if the indicator is that I should see the newsfeed, and if the newsfeed is the indicator for provisioning to complete, there's kind of a gap there because we had some initial issues with, I'm not sure how to articulate this, but for the newsfeed to come up, we have to have some bunch of data, especially the user profile data, in the cache, the user profile cache. And the cache refresh was actually taking some time, because of which people felt that, or the users felt that they're stuck in provisioning, but they were actually stuck because the cache was not getting populated. So we would get everything done with regard to provisioning at the back end, but the cache will not get populated with the right values when it comes to, let's say, the personal site URL or some of the other set of properties that the newsfeed feature depends on. So yeah, in Office 365, there's no easy way to figure out if your personal site is in place. But if you are an on-prem customer, or if you have an on-prem deployment, you could maybe, you know, look at some of the underlying aspects of your My Site or personal site to figure out, okay, your personal site is in place, but for some reason, your newsfeed is not coming up. So those are two different things. Yeah, so again, there's a level of detail there. So if I, as a user, post, let's say, 5 images, just the last one will get stored in the host site collection. The rest of them are moved to the user's personal site. I kind of did not mention that, but so if you have, let's say, 20 per user, just the last one, will get replaced by the latest image that you post on your newsfeed. Yeah, I'm going to try. If this works or not. All right. Yeah, looks like we have provisioning done. Yeah, please. Yes, so the provisioning pipeline will not really kick in an upgrade scenario because we have an upgrade pipeline. So all your upgrade of your site collections or your personal sites will go through that pipeline instead of the provisioning pipeline. So the provisioning pipeline will only kick in for new users. No, so I think those feeds are, the question is the feed that's already in the social database, what happens to that, those feeds at upgrade time? Isn't that the question? And I think there's a life span for those feeds. I think it's 2 weeks, and after that, those feeds just go away, right? So we'll, of course, keep those feeds for 2 weeks, and it'll still remain in the profile database, and after that, it'll just time out, and you'll not see them anymore after the 2 weeks.
Okay. So those feeds will still show up in 2013?
Yes. I think you had a question, right?
I have
several. Sure, go ahead.
I can do it after.
Okay. So you're talking about the content database scaling limits? Is that what your question is? Yeah, I think I'm not really sure. So the question is, what are the limits when it comes to content database, I think is your question. Yeah. Right, yeah. So, I mean, so the question is with regard to if we have a whole bunch of posts going into the content database, how is it going to scale, I think? How much will it grow, yeah. So I think we have a bunch of limits when it comes to content database and list that's published. I think when it comes to space, I think it's like 100 GB, and after that, you'll have to start thinking, you know, what you can possibly do. I think we also have limits around number of site collections per content database. Which is, I think, around 10 or 15,000. I can double check and get back to you. But so that's where you need to kind of plan your content database deployment, because if you are looking at 100,000 user deployment, then you need to plan for 100,000 site collections. And all the site collections cannot go into one content database. We have some restrictions around the number of site collections that you can store or create in one content database. And you need to keep that, keep those limits in mind. Yes. No, so I think, again, so that's where a little bit of planning would need to be done beforehand. If you feel that you have, let's say, 10,000 users or 100,000 users, right, you need to kind of look at the limits and see, okay, if it's 100,000 users, you'll need to plan for 100,000 site collections, which is personal sites. So let's look at the limits on, okay, how many site collections can go into each content database. So you'll have to pre-create that many content databases to start with. And if you have that many content databases in place, then the provisioning logic will make sure that site collections are created across these 10 databases, for example.
So it won't fill up one person?
No, it's going to span it out across the available databases.
I think it works currently.
I think that's for team sites, but we feel that my site adoption and my site or personal site creation is going to be a lot more in 2013 compared to team sites, and that's the reason why we have that logic in place. Oh, sorry. Yep. No, I mean, there's no email mechanism, but there are certain provisions with regard to what is shown as on the newsfeed page. So instead of a welcome message, you might also see, okay, there's something going on with your provisioning, so contact your administrator.
And the API calls that you mentioned, right, of the address that I'm going ahead and doing
the
request.
So if you have an app and I'm aware of the user, so if I'm an admin and I make any that API call and at the same time, the user goes to the So what will happen? No, yeah, of course, there'll be two items, in no scenario you'll have two items in the same queue. Right, so we make sure that we'll check if the queue already has a request for that same user. Now, it's quite possible that if you have the strategy in place where you're pushing requests into the non-interactive queue so that you don't really impact users who are coming through the browser, it's possible that user might get a personal site even before we process the, the request in the non-interactive queue, right? And in that case, it'll just be a no-op, so you'll not have an issue there. So. Yes, yes. I think there was a question, yeah. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. I'm sorry, I missed the last part again. So your question is there a way to control in which database a personal site should be created? No. We just go in round robin fashion. I think that's the question. Yeah, so when we looked at the experience for, so the question is when a user uses the Office 2013 client, user is still waiting to save. So why is that? Why didn't we consider speeding that up? I think that's the question. And the reason is when we compare the priority of a browser user and an Office 2013 client user, we felt that users who are actually going to the browser, there's kind of an intention behind that. That is, the user wants to actually interact with the newsfeed immediately, right? But when it, and there's no alternative there. The user cannot do anything else because the user wants to work with the social features. But when it comes to working with a document and saving a document, there's no alternate. I mean, there are a bunch of alternatives with regard to other save locations that the user can actually use. And that's the reason. I mean, of course, when it comes to priority, both are pretty much the same. But we wanted to give higher priority for the interactive users coming through the browser. So yeah, there's no great argument there. But we just wanted to give a higher priority for browser users. I'm sorry, I missed the part in between. Could you repeat the question, please? I'm not sure I understand the question, sorry. Yep. Yep. Yeah, so
what's the question?
I'm trying to understand the question again, but I guess what you're saying is if you have one web app for your MySite and for other like team sites and all that, will that impact the provisioning pipeline? Is that the question?
No, oh.
Yeah. Right. So even if you have one web app or multiple web apps, that will not have an implication on the provisioning pipeline because when it comes to provisioning, we are just basically looking at, so all the requests that I was talking about when it comes to pushing requests into a queue, the queue is in the content database where the MySite host site collection is provisioned. So if you have one web app or multiple web apps, we are really going to focus on that content database where the MySite host site collection is provisioned, and we pretty much ignore the other content database when it comes to request into the queue. So again, two aspects, right? You have request going to the queue and then processing the request. So when it comes to pushing request into the queue, we'll only consider the content database where the host site collection is provisioned. And of course, we will consider all the other content databases when it comes to processing and creating of personal sites. So if you have one web app or multiple web apps, we don't really look at web apps at all. We just look at the content database where the requests are going in, and we look at the content database where the request should be processed or where the personal site should be created. Yeah, so we don't have that in the non-interactive scenario. Yep.
Is there a way to customize the template of the personal site of the user, like one app user, for example,
not recommended. I mean, you can, of course, do that, but it's strongly not recommended for 2013. I mean, there is a template, but and you can, of course, change it, but I would strongly not recommend that.
You can use a feature receiver to make changes to that site.
Yeah. You could staple features to that. You're right.
My question's around, we have an intranet, which is where our my sites are located, but we also have an extranet, and we'd like to sync those we want to have the same experience in both, social-wise, but there are certain features, such as HR data and whatnot, that we're displaying on our intranet that we don't want displayed on our extranet, of course.
Okay.
What's the best way to accomplish that? Would it be two user profiles that we're syncing certain data, or can I still connect them both to a single user profile application?
So would that be, so you're going to have two services farm, is that?
I could have two services farm, that's legit, if.
Okay.
That's the best practice.
Yeah, maybe Luca, you can maybe help out there. I'm not.
So, That's all right.
Where is your HR data living? Is it inside your personal site?
Say that one more.
Where is your HR data lives?
It's they're promoted properties that we're properties, extra properties we're creating on the user profile that we're pulling in through BCS and stuff like that.
Okay, so you have some sensitive data in your personal profile, and when you are accessing from extranet, you don't want this information to be showed.
I want to guarantee the information is not showed.
Yeah, but yeah. but you still want to be part of your newsfeed and social experience over there.
Right.
No, that's not. We don't have a good solution out of the box for that.
Okay.
There's opportunities for partners and customizations.
Okay. I'm open to customizations. I mean, here, I'll check.
All right, sure. So the social database hasn't changed. It is as is. It's just that we've made changes to when it comes to storing new social data, when it comes to the new social features, that's going into the content database. But all the existing social data with regard to tags and notes and all that is still in the social database, and it's going to continue to be in the social database. So,
what's the roadmap then for moving more Yammer stuff into SharePoint within 2013 and 2014 that you expect?
I'm not sure. It's too early, I think, to answer that question.
Okay.
Do we have any more questions? Sorry, yep.
Okay. In regards to the scalability of the MyCycle host, obviously, since it's a single site collection, it can only reside in a single content database. If you have an organization with 200,000 users all aggressively using this capability, how large do you expect the photos
right. So I think when you plan for that kind of a rollout, so end of the day, if every user has a profile picture, and if every user does a post with an image, you need to basically account for at most of 2 pictures per user. And I think when we store these kind of pictures in the host site collection, the amount of space it takes is about 25 KB. So if you do the math, it's 200,000 multiplied by 50 KB. That's the amount of space that you need to plan for.
What if the user actually enjoys this feature with the share of data content? It won't be just a couple of pictures.
No, but rest. So all the rest is going to go into the user's personal site. That's a different site collection, right?
But what about the feed data?
Yeah, the feed data itself. That's not held in and aggregated in real time. The feed data is held in the site collection, right?
But that is in the personal site collection. As I mentioned, we have the MySite host site collection. That's the first one where we store user profile pictures and the feed pictures, right? And the second site collection, which I talked about, is the personal site collection where we store all the social data, right? So that's a different site collection. And that is a per user site collection. And Matt and Ben are going to dive into more details on what is really stored there and at what point. And we can talk more if you have concerns around scale over there. Yep.
That my site host site collection, it's out of the box, it's 50 megabytes, you said, right?
Yep.
And you said not to go over that?
Oh, no, I said if you are planning for a larger rollout, let's say more than 500 users or 800 users, yeah, then you should definitely, as a first step, you have to increase the quota for the host site collection. No. No. Yeah. All right. Thank you all for sticking around.